Welcome back to the Leadership and Management Book Talk Podcast. This is Art Petty. I am here with my good friend, Wally Bock. Wally, how are you today?
I am superb. I am excellent. I am so good. My future's so bright, as the song goes, that I gotta worship.
For those of you who can't see, since we're not using the video, Wally is not wearing shades today, but I love his enthusiasm. I love his passion for it. So, Wally, we're here to talk about The Ride of a Lifetime, Robert Iger, Lessons Learned from 15 Years as CEO of the Walt Disney Company. So this is a book. I don't remember which of us picked this one first, but I'm really glad we ended up here reading this book. It was a joy.
Well, I know that you read it first. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how we got to it on the podcast, but we need to start off by saying there's a little truth in advertising issue here.
Okay.
The subtitle of the book is Lessons Learned from 15 Years as CEO of the Walt Disney Company, and it delivers on that. But it's actually lessons learned since I was a kid missing Annette Funicello and listening to the Disney shows as I lay in my thing in Oceanside, California, New York. Sorry. I'm stuttering, but I'm okay.
Okay, that's good. No problems there. So Long Island or not? I don't know
Long
my
Island.
New York.
It's Oceanside, Long Island.
Okay.
I happen to know Oceanside, Long Island, because it's near Babylon, which is where my father grew up, and where a nephew is now in his residency Mount Sinai Hospital.
So, you know, as I was thinking about the podcast today, I was reflecting a little bit on my love affair with biographies. You and I have both talked about that before. We're both fans of them. I just find it such a powerful experience to be able to climb into the life of a human being and feel like you're living through it and experiencing it. And sometimes the biographies, they pull it off, in this case, autobiography, or in some cases they don't. You never really kind of penetrate the veil, so to speak. I really felt like I got to know Bob Iger through this book. And frankly, without stealing any thunder, I liked the guy a lot from reading this book, and I didn't know that much about him prior to it.
Well, I didn't know anything about him except that he'd been at Disney, and I read about some of the Pixar stuff in Ed Catmull's book, Creativity Inc. Big recommendation on that, listeners. I didn't really know about him. I found, as I read the book, like you, I got to like him, and I think part of that was that he was pretty clear throughout about stating how he felt, what he did, what the analysis was. And I never had one of those moments, which I often do in books like this, where I think, oh, come on. You know it wasn't like that. You know it wasn't. Come on. I liked the guy. I also liked the fact that this was a very well-written book. It was the kind that kept you moving. You didn't have to worry about, whether you understood the thing or not. The prose was clear. The points were good. It was a biography, so it had the life was the arc of the book. All of that was good. But this has got to be art. This has got to be one of the best leadership books that I've read, period. I'm gonna put it in the pantheon.
I'm right there with you. Maybe the best leadership book by a former company. Now, I guess we can say now former, or soon to be former, since he just announced his retirement about a week ago.
Yeah, he's got one foot out the door, but he's still got a foot on that rock. Yeah.
Timing is everything. So, something I did, I read the book a couple of months ago, and then I reviewed my notes. I went back and I did some kind of background research. I read a fascinating interview with Iger in the 2015, I think it was the December issue of Harvard Business Review. And that gave you a nice perspective and kind of foreshadowed a lot of what you would hear. Then there was a great piece in the New York Times that's relatively recent as well. And there were a lot of quotes from people describing Iger. And a couple of them that jumped out at me, and I chuckled at them, but I agree with it after reading his book. One was, nobody expected Bob Iger to be Bob Iger. He was consistently under-regarded, what's the right term I'm looking for here? He wasn't expected to be as remarkable as he turned out to be. Underestimated?
Yeah, and I took that as that this was a story of an ordinary guy. I mean, obviously an intelligent guy and all the rest of it, but an ordinary guy growing into the Bob Iger he became. You could see the values and stuff in the beginning and how it played out, but you could also see how the decisions got bigger and he developed some skills and he learned some lessons. And again, differently from a lot of these biographies, you got to see the change and the growth and the sophistication and the growing through meeting the challenges, which is, again, I think one of the great things about the book.
Yeah, no doubt. I found in one of the interviews an interesting comment. He was really self-conscious about this. His quote was, "It feels to me a bit like a big ego trip." And I think to his credit, it didn't come off sounding like a big ego trip. I only paused at one little passage in the book where I thought, okay, that was a little bit of ego talking there. But, you know, and that happened to be the passage where he momentarily was thinking of running for president.
Yeah, and I remember when we talked about this long ago before we scheduled the podcast, you said, you know, at that point, if they're running for president, I don't want to do it. And when I got to reading, that was before I had read the book.
Right.
When I read that passage, it said, no, I'm not gonna do it. It's a different skill set and so forth.
But, right.
And I said, ha, art's wrong.
It wouldn't be the first. I was wrong, Wally. You were right. I'm very good at using those words. My wife has taught me well, okay?
Yeah, yeah. What a strong woman. Anyway, one of the things that I liked about this, I want to share two things, overall. One is that this book gives you learning in two ways. There is that you learn from the book and reading it, but there are two places where he gets really explicit. In the prologue, he lays out 10 principles that he thinks have guided his life. And I love the fact that thoughtfulness is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Along with all the other stuff about courage and optimism and focus and decisiveness, there's thoughtfulness. And that came out in the book as well, I thought. But the other place, at the end of the book, he writes this section at the end, Lessons Learning to Lead.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, I wrote this book on leadership, but I thought maybe we should have all the lessons in one place, so I decided to add this. And that's a great book thing, too. If you're one of those people who reads for points, you can not do better than buying this book for those two sets of leadership lessons.
So I agree. I love the leadership lessons. I read for a different reason. I read for the journey and the insights, and I extracted those same leadership lessons. I didn't need the summary, and I think a lot of people, you know, you're extracting them from his experiences. He was pretty frank on what was working for him and what didn't, and where he made mistakes, and the conflicts and the challenges that he ran into in his various pursuits. So,
And I agree with you, and I read the same way, but I'm also a book writing coach by day. I put up my book writing coach outfit with the big red C on the front. And I think there are people who want bullet points. And this has got the bullet points if you want them. You'll miss a lot if you don't read the story. But if bullet points are what you're looking for in a business book, this is great. You can put those 10 principles on a page of TypeScript, which I did, which I've done, and have them for the rest of your life and never look at the book, never read the story, and never care about it.
The problem is that you won't know in this particular case what the author really intended and where they came from. And I want to know the genesis of those bullet points. I want meaning. I want some depth in them. I mean, I'm looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I do, Wally. So, by the way, it's really fun disagreeing with you.
Well, actually, we're not disagreeing, but
darn it, I'm wrong again.
Because I read the same way that you do. One of the things for me, this was a surprise to me. You and I had talked about the book. I had it on my list to read. I read it. I put the book review together before we were having this conversation. And one of the things that I found this interesting is I highlight all my books. I read my business books in electronic form so I can highlight and make flashcards and so forth. Good books have got highlights throughout, pretty much everywhere.
Right.
Great books have those mind-jarring bits where you put the book down and you stare off into the middle distance and think, oh, how would I use that? Or what exactly did that mean? Or how did that come about? The interesting thing for me was that when I went through this book the second time, I found that there's at least one of those mind jarrings in every chapter.
Wow.
And I don't know another book I've read. I haven't looked at other books in that light before, but I know that's not common.
That's high praise coming from you for sure. So for those out there who are just want to read because they're either fascinated by Disney or fascinated by the fact that this individual kind of touched so much of contemporary entertainment, it's a great history lesson going all the way back to Rune Arledge and the wide world of sports all the way through. And I didn't know a lot about what he did with Steve Jobs to negotiate the buyout of Pixar. I certainly didn't know that story where Jobs confessed to Iger that he was dying of pancreatic cancer and gave him an option to opt out of the deal with Pixar. I had no idea. His issues with 20th Century Fox and Marvel. And I mean, Iger presided in his own kind of nice, polite, good guy manner over forging some really incredible relationships and changing the face of the entertainment industry.
Yeah, changing the face dramatically. If you remember that when he took over, Disney did not include all that stuff.
Right.
And there was no Disney in Shanghai, which is now probably closed because of,
momentarily, as of this
COVID-19. Yeah, momentarily.
And what did it take him? I mean, 15 years, 18 years of negotiation or something like that in order to close that deal. So a testament to the patience and playing the long game there.
Definitely. I think like a lot of great leaders that I've met, he wasn't playing the long game as so much as he had his eye on that horizon out there, but he was taking the opportunities as they came.
Mm-hmm.
I had a mentor, Leonard Tompkins, that was like that. I mean, he never had a long range goal for his company, but he had this kind of idea of what he wanted Tompkins machinery to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he saw something that kind of fit, he worked and said, and if it fit a little better, he went after it. And that was my sense of the way Iger worked, that there wasn't a master plan. There was collecting opportunities and seeing linkages and listening to people.
Good listener. Yeah. I mean, I think about the people he dealt with, from Roy Disney to George Lucas to Steve Jobs to Rupert Murdoch and Murdoch's sons to, I forget the gentleman's name who he bought Marvel from. I mean, the people that he had to develop those relationships with. You know what I want? I want to extract from this a book on partnering and deal making.
There, I think you could probably do that. And have yourself maybe not a bestseller, but at least a hell of a good book.
There's something, yeah. There's a good idea there. I wish I knew a book writing coach to help me out there.
Well, we'll see. We'll give you a special deal, double the normal rate. No problem.
What a deal! So you know, some of the things that really kind of wowed me, and it was early in the book. They had the horrible nightclub shooting in Florida. Mm-hmm. Just about the same time as the tragedy with the young child and the alligator at Disney World.
Right.
And I defy anyone not to get choked up reading what I, have to hope and believe are Iger's real emotions and real words at the points of both of those tragedies, particularly the tragedy with the child and the alligator. Those were powerful moments in this book.
Yeah, actually, I thought there were a lot of powerful moments because there were a lot of descriptions of this happened and I had to go sit someplace and think about it. And again, I've known a lot of great leaders and that's what they do. I can remember a guy who I won't name because I don't have his permission, but we were having a lunch when he got notice of something that had happened with one of his employees, and he said, to those of us at the table, he said, excuse me a minute, I just need to go sit in the car and think for a while. Mm-hmm. And about 10 minutes later, he came back and he had done his thinking and made his call and so forth. And there are several of those things in there, several just around the Steve Jobs relationship. If you're going to write about that book about relationships and deal making, this is a really good example.
The way he managed that one, and you couldn't manage Steve Jobs, but the way that he helped Jobs turn the corner on the view of Disney was just masterful and worth twice the price of the book itself.
Yeah, I'm gonna stick something else in here, and then we can go back to the book in a second. I think Steve Jobs gets a really raw deal because most of the presentations we've got of Jobs are based on the Steve Jobs before he came back to Apple.
Right.
And as you know, I have a friend who was fired by Jobs in a very public and uncomfortable way, a nasty way. But when you read stories, Iger's thing, Catmull's book, other things, it's clear that in addition to being a very smart guy and maybe the best CEO product developer ever, he changed as he aged and he became a better version of Steve Jobs. And that's evident in this book. The Steve Jobs that's here is not the 22-year-old jerk worth a few million dollars. It's the guy that's going to die in a couple years of pancreatic cancer.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, that's... you're making me want to stop and go think about that for a little while. I agree. You know what jumps to mind? And you always wonder when someone's life is cut short, what could have been, what would have been. And for Jobs, he's still so real and had such a palpable impact in our world today that you can only imagine of what might have happened had we gone forward. Of course, we'll never know, but... so be it. So, all right, enough being philosophical on that one. I have to tell
okay.
you, my favorite segment of the book was when Iger was navigating the board. Eisner is going to retire. Michael Eisner was his predecessor. And Iger is pretty much guilty by association and told by many people that he has no chance whatsoever of making it to the CEO slot. This is just another example of him being underestimated in his career. And he describes this crucible of events that he had to go through. I think 15 board meetings or 18 board meetings, whatever the number was, where he said it was not only a test of his character, it was effectively a test of his ability to control himself. And in fact, at one point, he even lost the ability to control himself because he had hit the limit of board meetings. But he was counted out by almost everyone in getting that job. And he got that job. And, you know, for Disney, it was a game changer.
Yeah, I think that's, and again, that's in parts of those. He's underestimated. And he stays the course. And because he stays the course, he gets an opportunity to do something. And then there are all these things, well, I'm going to make this call because I think it's the right call. And it, of course, the ones we hear about are the ones that turned out right. We don't know how many he got talked out of along the way, but it's a clear thing. There's one other, I think, important thing about lesson from this book, though, that I want to get to, and I want to make sure before we wrap. And that's that when I read about mentors in most books, it's like you need a mentor. And other books say, well, you need several mentors. What I really liked about the way Iger worked, as demonstrated in this book, was that he took what was good and what fit him from everyone that he worked with. So he took some of that deal making from Eisner. He took some of that concentration on doing it well. He says at one point in the book something like, if you're going to make things, make great things.
Right.
He talks about the pursuit of excellence that he took from Arledge and other people. And that's, I mean, if I look back at my life, there wasn't like one great person. There were several. And there were lessons. There were things I took from some of the worst bosses and people that I dealt with that were positives for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I, I don't think that message is there enough, but it's there. It's here in this book if you want to find it.
I love that perspective, kind of an amalgam of mentors that make up our careers there. That sounds like a great blog post.
I'll race an amalgam of mentors.
You'll be seeing that, the Leadership Caffeine post.
I suspect. I personally would not use amalgam in a headline. But feel free.
I've been defying convention for my entire life. It gets me all 10 to 15 readers, okay? No one said I could write headlines, Wally. So one of the things that I'm kind of capping off, the value of his that I liked the most was his perspective on optimism. I've worked around a lot of leaders who were in this perpetual hair on fire, the sky is falling, we're living in a crisis mode. And Iger takes exactly the opposite perspective. And I'm reading from the book, optimism sets a different machine in motion, especially in difficult moments. The people you lead need to feel confident in your ability to focus on what matters and not to operate from a place of defensiveness and self-preservation. I just love that.
Okay, now I'll tell you what I like. Mm-hmm. And I like the optimism. You just read one, whether, I don't know if I highlighted the whole thing, but
right.
I know I highlighted that thing. The thing that most affected me, and part of that has to do with the times we're living in, is this is a nice guy. This is a nice guy. You know, he's not dishing dirt on people that he's, you know, that have worked with him and stuff. And he's, you know, he's not bargaining for, you know, for the throat. It's thoughtfulness and courtesy are part of the way he deals with just about everything. And I know, because I have failed on those so many times.
Well, I think your nice guy comment is so true. And I came across a quote from David Geffen. His quote says,
"Oh yeah,
literally, I have never heard one person say a bad thing about him, and I've never seen him be mean. To be honorable, decent, smart, successful, and a terrific guy is unusual anywhere, but it's most unusual in the entertainment business. He's in a category of one." So that really gaps off here. He, you know, Iger seemed like he was genuinely a nice guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And another reason to read the book. You
no
can
doubt.
Succeed as a nice guy.
So, you know, I'm hearing two resounding heck yes on heck yeah.
Heck yes. We got heck yes.
Yeah. All right. Good deal. So, yeah, great recommendation. Read it on a number of levels. Read it for the fascinating contemporary history of the entertainment world. Read it for the leadership lessons. Read it for the leadership summary lessons in the bullet areas that you like so much. But enjoy it. Enjoy a chance to get to know Bob Iger.
I say amen.
All right, Wally. As usual, this was great fun. Thanks so much. We'll see you on the next episode.
Sounds like fun.